We continue with our examination of the radical Islamic terrorist attacks in Brussels from this past week. We look at how terrorism is regarded and whether more is spent reacting to it rather than getting ahead of it and preventing it. To do this, we turn to my next guest, who is a noted terrorism and policy expert that's consulted with a variety of government agencies, political campaigns, as well as policymakers. He's a national security analyst with the Clarion Project, Professor Ryan Morrow. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning.
And it's clarionproject.org. Read more about Ryan's writings on this issue, along with many other factual and reality-based individuals who are very knowledgeable about the topic that we are addressing here this morning. Seems like time after time, Ryan, the attacks by radical Islam are written off as lone wolf. That one's a lone wolf. This one's a lone wolf. There is no network. That was just one. We got the last one that was a lone wolf. And my response is always, how many lone wolves do you require before you have a pack of a network?
That's a good way of putting it, and I wish I had that line. But it's really the difference is between what's called lone wolves, which I think is a deceptive term to begin with, and a network, is that lone wolves may be one or two people acting largely just under the direction of themselves, whereas a network, you have safe houses, financial streams, you have routes in and out of an area, particularly like a continent like Europe, that have been practiced. And so you have a system going. But the lone wolf terminology has always been deceptive, and I think even dangerous to some degree, because when you use that terminology, it makes it sound like these are just crazy folks that are an inevitable part of life that you have to deal with. And so it strengthens the argument that there are crazy people out there not connected to a broader threat that you can actually address. This is something for law enforcement, and deal with it.
And that's certainly something we see now with Salam. Abdeslam, he had the network that could keep him underground and feed him financially and otherwise for all these months. And we saw that upon his, thankfully, apprehension, it brought a response. And this certainly was not a response by a lone wolf, was it?
No. And so we've seen this network grow in recent months, but it really kind of burst onto the scene in what was a real frightening development when the attacks happened in Paris. And they were frightening not just because of the death toll, obviously, but it was the fact that we didn't see this incremental change in ISIS's capabilities in Europe. It was the so-called lone wolf, and then bam, there was this network we now had to deal with, and the network still exists. And that was shocking for counterterrorism officials to see that level of growth that was largely not detected. And where the Abdeslam was arrested is getting a lot of attention, finally, because people knew him there. He grew up in that area. You have a tribal mindset that's happening in some of these Muslim communities in Europe that don't assimilate, where a community may not support ISIS or a terrorist, but when law enforcement comes into that area and then arrests one of them, the tribal mindset kicks in. They say, this is a hostile authority, and I'm going to start throwing rocks and bottles at the cops. And that's an explosive situation.
Well, it's something we saw the aftermath of San Bernardino, which, by the way, should we reconsider looking at those two individuals as lone wolves? But when the feds went in and talked to the Islamic community and said, basically, if you see something, say something, the response by the majority of that community was, no, we're not going to.
And if I remember correctly, the imam was caught lying about how well he knew them, which adds a whole new layer of it. Did the imam necessarily know that they're ISIS? Maybe, maybe not. But he was probably preaching extremism, which is the foundation for ISIS. And so part of me gets frustrated when I see politicians boasting about how tough they're going to be on destroying ISIS, and we're just going to bomb the living hell out of them. And first of all, that's not really a detailed policy that I find impressive to begin with. But secondly, that's not really the threat. ISIS is a product. You have to go after the factory, the radical Islamic factories. We could kill every supporter of ISIS tomorrow, and then within a short period of time, someone else will fill that gap. And then we would say, man, how do we end up here again?
Ryan Morrow, who is a national security analyst with the Clarion Project. ClarionProject.org is their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. And when you look at, going to the source, much like you would with the cancer, and if you have cancer of the pancreas, you're not going to examine the brain, for example. And it seems like, and this is something that I've spoken about with you in the past and for the last almost going on 15 years since September 11th attacks, It seems like no one wants to approach, at least in this country, as well as in England, from what I've been able to understand, the factories which are a great deal of the mosques.
It's changing in Europe very quickly, and it's going. You just wait a few days, because it's been changing in recent months, where you have European leaders openly talking about having to deal with the non-violent Islamist ideology that then leads to violence, meaning the politicized version of the faith that opposes integration. So the European leaders are saying the right things. Even in the United States, there's been a debate that's been largely won, whereas you had the Bush administration and then, to a worse degree, the Obama administration not describing as radical Islam or some type of Islamic terminology, but now look at what the candidates are doing. On the Republican side, they use radical Islam as identifying the enemy, and that's positive. And then Hillary Clinton defines it as jihadism, and sometimes she says jihadists who are Islamists, to be more specific. That's a positive development when you have both political parties now using roughly the same ideology when for so long that wasn't the case. It's belated, but at least it's positive.
When we look at Belgium today with its infestation of radical Islamic terrorism that's existing in, as we, I don't think anyone can deny now, in a network form and shape, how much of Belgium's today has the potential to be America's tomorrow, if it isn't already?
Well, completely. There's two ways. First of all, Europe is going to become a launching pad for attacks on the United States. That network actually already exists because it's easy to fly here. You just have to invest your resources. And the reason you haven't seen it happen yet is because ISIS hasn't really been trying. Their focus has been going after North Africa, the Middle East, and then going after Europe. So they haven't activated the European network, as far as we can tell, to come after the United States full force. But what you see happening in Belgium and in Europe, that is a foreshadowing of what comes to the United States over time, because the same ingredients that lead to this network being assembled in Europe exist in the United States, just in smaller quantity, and so they need more time to mature. But it will happen. It will happen if the trends continue.
I know you filter a lot of information and get bombarded because of the nature of your studies, so I know you don't see and hear about everything, but I wonder if you caught this little gem. This is State Representative in Tennessee, Republican Representative Martin Daniel. He's introduced the Tennessee Student Free Speech Protection Act. And during a debate about this, a Democrat member of the State House asked Representative Martin Daniel, does that mean that ISIS could come onto a college campus and recruit? Would you have a problem with that? And Representative Daniel said, nope, I have no problem with that, as long as they don't make a disruption. I mean, if we have that kind of mindset and open borders to just tear down any sort of prevention of the cultivation of terrorism with a totally idiotic idea like that and a stand behind that, what chance do we have?
Well, what's interesting there is that the process seemed a little bit backwards. Normally, we're used to some crazy elements of the left being the ones that take it too far in terms of free speech and tolerating the intolerable. But here you had a Republican that was putting forth this bill that would give just complete free speech rights under every circumstance practically on college campuses. And it was a Democrat that said, wait a minute. This means ISIS could come recruit on campuses, right? And you had the Republican saying, yeah. And then as a result of that exchange, the legislation was pushed over to the side in the subcommittee, thankfully. But that's not a theoretical problem. There's a professor named Julio Pino at Kent State University in Ohio who is an ISIS and Al-Qaeda supporter. The FBI is investigating him for recruiting people, including students, to ISIS, and he kept his job. That's a guy that actually, if you support ISIS, you support killing those students, but he keeps his job.
Incredible. Wrapping our time with Ryan Morrow from the Clarion Project. He's their national security analyst. ClarionProject.org is their website here on Issues and Ideas. It seems like it's every time we hope for the best after one of these terrorism events happen. So let's go into what is the land of obvious in the aftermath of Belgium and Brussels. What is your hope?
Well, here's one statistic that can give you hope, and it reflects how the American Muslim community is very different from Europe. 75% of the time that a foreign fighter is arrested on American soil, meaning someone that seeks to go join a terrorist group overseas or has already done so and then came back, 75% of the time that they get busted, it's because of an informant that the FBI has within their inner circle. The vast majority of the time, that's going to be a Muslim. And that's going to be a Muslim who put their life on the line, because if that terrorist found out that he had a wire on him and was recording him, they're dead. But they were willing to do it, and it results in these arrests. And that's part of the reason that you haven't seen so many disasters on American soil, and why we've had such success. So that's a positive trend.
He is a national security analyst with the Clarion Project on the web at clarionproject.org. Professor Ryan Morrow, thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you so much.